Hey, Rich, I'd like to let you know something. I have never gotten a tie for Father's Day. Woohoo! And you know why? Because my children don't want to waste their money. Because they're like, I'm not real sure he even knows. I know how to tie one, but I tie a really good tie, but never gotten a tie for Father's Day. I just think that's kind of cool. My kids know me well. They're like, what would be the point? Happy Father's Day again. It's one of those days that we kind of mark on our calendars, and well, it just seems appropriate that if you remember this villainous series that we are doing, where we're looking at these villains from the Bible, well, we started it back on Mother's Day. So we started all the way back on Mother's Day, and from Mother's Day to Father's Day, we have been looking at these villains. And so it just seems appropriate if I started on Mother's Day. I've got to end it on Father's Day, right? I can't leave the dads out of this. And so just so you know, what we've been doing, we've been looking at biblical villains. And to kind of give it a fun summer element, we've taken those biblical villains and we've kind of married them to their Disney counterparts. And so we went to Rapunzel's Tower and we met Mother Gothel and we kind of put her with Athalia. And then we went down the rabbit hole and we found the Queen of Hearts and we also found Herodias. We went under the sea and we found Ursula, but we also came face to face with our desires and Delilah. We took a magic carpet ride out to the land of Aladdin and we met Jafar and well, we found Haman. We scoured the streets of London and we found Radigan, but also we found this guy named Achan. And last week we went to the Sahara and there we visited with Scar and lo and behold, we found the very first murder. We found Cain. And so today we are going to, well, we're going back to England, just not to modern day England. We're going to not only go from a different place, we're going to do a little time travel. I hate time travel TV shows, just so you know that. They give me a headache. They don't understand time. But today we're going to do a little time travel and go back to the medieval times of England. And we are going to meet Prince John. And Prince John is from the retelling of the classic Disney tale Robin Hood. Now, I got corrected on this because I wanted to put Robin Hood in the Disney Dark Ages. It actually isn't. It was actually the last film that Walt himself worked on. Matter of fact, as you were watching that clip I showed you, you saw that chicken and the bear dancing. You realize where that dance came from? It was the same footage they used for Jungle Book when King Louie and Baloo were doing, they did the same dance. So this was the last film that Walt himself actually had a productive hand in putting together. And by the way, thank you for that fun fact, Caleb. I got corrected. I cannot put this in the Disney Dark Ages. This is still part of the Disney classic age. And well, they called him the phony king of England, and his name is Prince John, and that usually means that he is the son of the king. But Prince John is not the son of the king. He is the brother of the king, and the real king is off fighting a war, and he left his brother in charge. And well, like last week's character, he's a lion, but he's a cowardly lion, and well, he's a crybaby. And Prince John sees kingship as a means to collect taxes and then call out brash statements of what he's going to have done to people if they don't pay taxes. His favorite statement is, guards, seize them. He's always calling for his guards to seize somebody. And well, the way that John rules, they called him the phony king of England because he is an inconsistent and insecure king. And really what John's story is all about, Prince John's story is all about, is, well, it's called a villainous mouth. This is what it says in James chapter 3, verses 5 through 6. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes a great boast. Consider what great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. So the Bible warns us much about our tongues. And the funny thing is that our tongues are a great indicator of what's inside of our life, because what does it say? Out of the mouth flows that which is in the heart. What's on my inside will eventually come out of my mouth. What I really think will come out. And just so we have our Father's Day twist, and we're going to get more into a Father's Day theme here, there is a Father's Day command that goes to our mouth, and that is, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And let me just tell you something. I've been a dad now for 18 years. I'm like not like the most experienced one that's here today or probably watching online. But I have learned there is nothing more exasperating to my children than when I say one thing and then don't do it myself. When I put instruction out of my life out to my kids and tell them that that doesn't apply to me, that's one of those moments that my mouth has betrayed me. And my statements don't mean very much. So today, as we follow along to our next villain, we're going to take a look at the exasperating father and the inconsistent and insecure king, and it is none other than King Saul. Now, who is King Saul? Well, he is the first king of Israel, according to 1 Samuel chapter 10, verses 22 through 24. By the way, you can start making your way to 1 Samuel. I'll give you your landing spot in just a moment. So according to 1 Samuel chapter 10, verses 22 to 24, he is the first king of Israel. And while he was selected by God, 1 Samuel chapter 15, verses 34 through 35, later tells us that he was rejected by God. Then Samuel left for Ramah, and Saul went to his home in Gibeah of Saul. Until the day Samuel died, he did not go to see Saul again. Though Samuel mourned for him, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. I cannot tell you how hard that must have been to know that the guy regretted making Saul king because of his inconsistency. Now, like our Prince John, he also hits his Robin Hood and his man to marry men, except for we call him David, the eventual replacement king. And David had his troop of mighty warriors, and they became kind of adversaries as things were going on. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Saul also had a problem of being wildly inconsistent, just like Prince John. One of those good examples you find in 1 Samuel chapter 28, verses 8 through 10. Saul had passed a law, and he said, hey, look, we're gonna clean Israel up, and we're going to do away with witchcraft and all these worshiping of the dark arts. It's all gone. And then Saul finds himself in a bind, so what does he do? He puts on a disguise and goes to see the witch of Endor and asks her to tell about his future. See, this is the kind of king that King Saul became because of the fact he did one thing that was very, very wrong. He decided this was his kingdom. This wasn't God's at all. And he decided he was going to do it his way and not the way God said do it. And out of his mouth came some very brash statements, and we're going to look at one of those today. I ask you to go to 1 Samuel. Now make your way to chapter 14. And, well, we're going to eventually land in verse 24, but let me just give you a little backstory to kind of set the stage so you know what's going on. So Israel is out, and they're at war with the Philistines. So just like the king had gone off to war, they are at war. And Saul is there at the war with them. And well, Saul has a son. Ironically, his name is Jonathan. So Saul actually has a Prince John. Isn't that kind of cool? So it's a father-son story because Jonathan decides to make old dad proud. And Jonathan breaks off from the battle. And he goes out and he basically kills a bunch of Philistines. And he wins a huge battle. Just him and his sword bearer. That's pretty cool. Jonathan was a very brave individual. And then the story goes on that after Jonathan did this, God kicked in and said, I'm going to finish the job that Jonathan starts. And God causes a localized earthquake. And the Philistines get all upset and they begin to kill one another in the panic. And so all of a sudden, the war is over, the battle is over, and nobody had to draw a sword. Well, okay, the Philistines did, but they only drew it against themselves. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Now, I don't know about you, but if I was king, and all of a sudden there was a battle, and there was a battle going on, and I managed to beat a bigger army, and I didn't lose a soul, I think I would be happy, wouldn't you? I mean, that would be awesome. Let's pick up our story in verse 24. Now the Israelites were distressed that day because Saul had bound the people under an oath, saying, "Cursed be anyone who eats food before evening comes, before I have avenged myself on my enemies." So none of the troops tasted food. Huh? Saul, you won. Saul, your victory, you're throwing the party, you're honoring your brave son. Saul, you get Saul's problem, right? We saw this later with David when they were singing David's praise, and Saul got upset because they said that Saul only killed 1,000 while David killed 10,000. Saul has a pride issue here. He's like, wait a minute. No, I didn't get to do anything. And we're going to I'm going to avenge my enemies, and nobody's going to eat until this is done. See, there's just something wrong with that. That's not the way a king is supposed to act. The king should have been handing out a medal. The king should have been praising God. The king should have been doing it. But no, this king, instead of doing that, he's out making these bold, brash statements about how I'm king and I'm going to show you. And there are some very negative consequences that I think maybe we can associate when we make brash, bold statements without thinking it through that happen in our own lives. It created distress among his troops. I mean, here his troops were, and you know what they say, that an army travels on their belly, right? People like to eat, and you soldiers have to eat. And so now they've all been out there, and they've been ready to fight this battle, and now guess what? They're hungry, and Saul says, no, until I win the battle. You're not going to eat. Wow. That's a very inconsistent and phony, kingly thing to do. He puts his own army at distress over a stupid pledge. It was self-serving, not God-honoring. He wasn't doing this because he wanted to bring glory to God. Who did he want to bring glory to? Saul. He was using his kingly power to say, I want the focus on me. And so he's not honoring God in this moment. He's just serving himself. And you know what? The only thing he was concerned about was his own petty revenge. He wanted to look good. And it was the only thing that he was weighing in this whole story was the idea that I want this to be about me. We'd never do that, would we? We'd never take a ministry that God gave us and turn it to wanting to be all about what I'm doing in this ministry. We'd never do something like that. We'd never take a job that God gave us and turn it into, well, this is my job, my accomplishment. We'd never do something like that, right? We'd never take gifts and talents that God gave us and say, well, these are mine, and I'm going to show you how great I am because I want you to see how good I use my gifts. We'd never do that. Of course we would. And you do understand that when the world sees how we do this, then what comes out of our mouth doesn't make sense to them. Here's the funny thing. It ultimately causes his men to commit sin, because when the famine ends, this is what it says in verses 31 through 33. When the fast ends, this is what it says in verses 31 through 33. The day after the Israelites had struck down the Philistines from Michmash and Ajonon, I didn't pronounce these things correctly probably, they were exhausted. They pounced on the plunder and taking sheep, cattle and calves, they butchered them on the ground and ate them. They missed a step. What didn't they do? Ew, they didn't even cook these things. Okay, that's totally against Jewish dietary law. Just go read Leviticus, and it's just downright disgusting. But I want you to see, Saul had put them, by his style of leadership, by his compulsive statement that he was going to make them be hungry until he won a battle, after they finally won a battle, now we can eat. And they sinned in doing so. They broke God's command to them in doing so. Now, along came the priest. And how much better would it have been if the men had eaten today? Some of the plunder they took from their enemies, would not the slaughter of the Philistines have been even greater? Excuse me, I skipped the verse now, sorry. They butchered them on the ground and they ate them together with the blood. Then someone said to Saul, look, the men are sinning against the Lord by eating meat that has blood in it. Yeah. He brought them that way in verses 31 through 34. Now, here's the thing. What also happened, and I already read part of this verse, but we'll come back to it now. What also happened is eventually Saul's brash statement condemned his own son. This is what it says right there in verses 29 through 30. I think I've got the wrong reference there. I did. I've made mistakes. Jonathan said, "My father has made trouble for the country. See how my brightened eyes were tasted a little of this honey. How much better would it have been if the men had eaten today some of the plunder they took from the enemies? Would not the slaughter of the Philistines have been even greater?" So here's what happens in the story. So before all of this happens, and Jonathan has gone out, and he's won his battle, and he's walking through the woods, and he looks up, and there's an abandoned beehive. And it's dripping with honey. Okay, I can sympathize because I like honey. So he takes the little spear, and he sticks it up through the beehive, and he brings down some of the honey, and he tastes the honey before Saul had won his battle. Wait a minute, that's honey. And Jonathan now ate. So Jonathan not only disobeyed his king, but guess who else he disobeyed? His father. Jonathan decided, "Dad, it's a nice thought what you're saying, but you know what? You missed the boat. Dad, you're using your power all wrong. Dad, you're being a phony king. Dad, you're being an inconsistent king. You may give us no reason for doing this other than your petty revenge. And Dad, I don't agree with you." And now we have a problem. Because now Saul has got to figure out a way to get out of the idea of, oh my gosh, how do I fix those words that came out of my mouth? Now, I am a guy that maybe has made a profession of sticking their foot in their mouth. Okay? I'm good at it. If you want lessons, let me know. I'm really good at it. Good thing I have small feet and a big mouth. They fit. Okay? But I'm also a guy that when I say something really stupid, I usually get enough gumption to come back later and say, that was stupid. And I thought Saul might get that thing. I mean, he wouldn't actually kill his own son over a taste of honey, would he? Well, let's follow the story. The story's down in 38 and 39, and we get to a very arrogant situation for Saul. And this is what it says. Saul therefore said, "Come here, all who are leaders of the army, and let us find out what sin has been committed today." So he gets word that somebody has eaten. "As surely as the Lord who rescued Israel lives, even if the guilt lies with my son, he must die." But not one of them said a word. I've been here, okay? Mom and dad are upset, and somebody's going to get punished. And this is the time, probably the only time, me and my sisters were all on the same page. We ain't saying a word. I don't think so. Because after they're done with them, who knows who's going to come next down the line. So everybody gets together, and Saul comes around, and he hears that somebody ate, but nobody tells him who. So he calls everybody together. He said, "Okay, we're going to stand here, and we are going to find out who ate, and whoever ate, even if it's my son Jonathan," I'm sure he's saying this sarcastically, "even if it's my own son, you understand, I'm going to kill him." Oh my gosh, this is the king talking. And well, now he's going to have a problem because nobody's saying a word. So now he drags God into the situation. So he goes and he begins to ask God, "God, tell me who the guilty party is. Tell me who sinned." And I love what verse 41 says. It says, "Then Saul prayed to the Lord, the God of Israel, why have you not answered your servant today?" It's funny. God's not giving Jonathan up either. God said, "No, you've missed the point here. I'm not giving him up either. I'm not going to tell you who it is." And so they did the only rational thing that he could do, right? Well, the rational thing would be give it up. No, he decides he's going to cast lots. So now they're going to draw straws to see who the guilty party is. verses 42 through 43 says, Saul said, cast lots between me and Jonathan. So they kind of whittled it down to see whether or not it's Jonathan. They figured out it's Jonathan. And Jonathan was taken. Then Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what you have done. So Jonathan told him, I tasted a little honey with the end of my staff, and now I must die. Oh my gosh. You can't be serious, right? He's not actually going to kill his own son over this kind of an action, is he? I mean, that's silly. I mean, just move on, Saul. Your first statement was wrong, that you were going to not let your troops eat, and now you're wrong in trying to kill your son, and now you've got it. You're not actually going to do it. Well, he's planning on it, folks. We get another brash statement. Saul said, may God, be careful when you start dragging God in these situations, folks. May God deal with me ever so severely if you do not die, Jonathan. He's going to do it. He's going to kill his son over an arrogant statement and a taste of honey. And I would think that was ridiculous, except for the fact that I think sometimes we see in the church how things begin with something we said, and before we know, we're ready to execute a brother or sister over something that we said that we just can't figure out any other way to get back to it. We can't back out of it. We said it. We want everybody to think we're truthful about our word, and so we forge ahead. But here's what I want you to keep in mind. This was not a God-said moment. Remember back with Achan, that they pulled Achan out from the camp and they torched all of his belongings and they stoned him and they killed him and they buried him under a pile of rocks, him and his family. And I told you the reason that they did that is because God said, this is not a God-said moment. Saul is not in a moment. God did not tell him to make this oath to say nobody gets to eat until you get your revenge. This is an I said moment. And we need to learn to recognize the difference between the two. Because when God says, that's solid. When I say, there's some wiggle room. Believe it or not, I know this will shock you. I've been wrong before. Many times in my life. I've gone down paths that sometimes I get way down the path. I'm like, oh my gosh, I took a turn like 20 years back up the road. I should have turned the other way and I didn't go. I've been wrong. And I can't have an I said moment like this, and I'm going to make it a God said moment. And that is exactly what Saul did. And here's the deal. When you turn the page, what you get is a happy ending for Jonathan. This is what it says. But the men said to Saul, the men, the troops, the army, they stood up. But the men said to Saul, should Jonathan die, he who has brought about a great deliverance in Israel? Never. As surely as the Lord lives, not a hair of his head will fall to the ground. For he did this today with God's help. So the men rescued Jonathan, and he was not put to death. Thank goodness somebody had some common sense, right? But now Saul has a problem. Because Saul made the other brash statement, didn't he? He drug God into his I said moment. He looked at his men and he invoked God into an arrogant statement. And remember what he said? If Jonathan doesn't die, may God deal with me so severely. You know, folks, be careful when you drag God into your arrogance. Because he might just give you exactly what you asked for. And you know what begins to happen after this particular moment? Saul's kingdom, it just begins to unwind. One chapter later, this is the chapter in Saul's kingdom, in Saul's story. Then Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned. I violated the Lord's command and your instructions, but I want you to see why he sinned. I was afraid of the men, so I gave in to them. Now I beg you to forgive of my sin and come back with me, so I may worship the Lord. But Samuel said to him, I will not go back with you. You have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you as the king over Israel. What happened when we got to the next situation? And you know what? Saul was supposed to wait for Samuel to come and make some sacrifices. And well, Samuel was late. And Saul was waiting and waiting, and the men were getting anxious. And the men were looking at Saul. He's saying, why don't you just make the sacrifices? Let's get the show on the road. Come on, the clock is ticking. And Saul decides that he's going to make the sacrifices. Why did he do it? Because he's now afraid of his own men. Remember? These were the men that wouldn't let him kill Jonathan. So now instead of being the king, I am now just a phony king. Nobody's following me anymore. And I was afraid that if I didn't do this, Samuel, they were going to kill me. And well, it just continues to spiral for poor old Saul. Later on, he becomes tortured by an evil spirit. He is watching his successor be anointed. Before he's dead, before he's no longer king of Israel, guess what? David comes on the scene, and Samuel, the prophet that anointed him king, now anoints David king. Not only does he have to sit there and watch him get anointed, he gets to watch David rise to power right before his eyes. He watches as the entire Israel nation begins to clamor the name of David, sing the praises of the name of David. It's all about David now, and Saul realizes he's losing grip. Didn't that what he asked for, though? May God deal so severely with me if I don't do this? It gets so bad with David, Saul becomes obsessed with him. He spends much of the latter part of his kingship chasing David all through the wilderness in an effort to kill David. Over and over and over again, David has to run for his life. And here's the saddest thing of all. Ultimately, good old King Saul dies on the battlefield by falling on his own sword. He commits suicide rather than be captured as a king. I got to think about that. Because you know what? Sometimes my mouth gets me in a lot of trouble. A whole lot of trouble. And I have been guilty sometimes of dragging God into my way. You know how we do it, right? Well, we don't actually say God deals so severely. What we do, we quote a scripture here, put a little context with this, patch a scripture into this to support my statement, and then I try to convince everybody that, well, I'm not doing this because of me. This is a God thing. And we've got to be careful when we do that. Because God is God, and God is a God of consistency. God is a God that says what he says, and he meant what he said, and he always followed through on what he said. God is a God of fulfilling his promises. When I do that, and I make myself the king, I become inconsistent in my faith. I do. Because then I have to back up what I said. I become insecure in my faith. Because you know what? I said one thing, but I'm doing another. And oh my gosh, eventually somebody's going to catch me doing the other. And when they catch me doing the other, now I have to explain why my actions don't fit up with my words. And I'm insecure. And ultimately, I become ineffective. I become an ineffective father. My kids don't want to listen to me if I have that kind of a reputation. I would definitely become an ineffective minister because I don't know why y'all would listen to me. But here's the thing. I become an ineffective witness for Christ if my words say one thing and my actions say something else. Should they not align? If God is really living inside of me, shouldn't what comes out of me measure up to what's living inside of me? Or am I more like good old Prince John? I just want somebody to love me. Pay me my taxes. Give me my due. Give me my crown. Give me my kingdom. It'll all be good. No, that's not how God wants us to live our life. He doesn't want us to be a fake or a phony. He wants us to be the real deal. People that give our lives to Christ.